Radio 4, where now Geoffrey Richards investigates a case for Dr. Morell in the Radio Detectives.
Murder. Yes, Miss Nicholson. Murder.
BBC presents A Case for Dr. Morell, another adventure by Ernest Dudley, with Cecil Parker as the famous Dr. Morell and Sheila Sim as his secretary, Miss Frail. Voice in the Night.
The 1940s was the era when the psychiatrist became a popular hero in the cinema. Omniscient, compassionate and humane, the psychiatrist, Claude Rains in Now Voyager, Lou Ayres in The Dark Mirror, or Herbert Lom in The Seventh Veil, provided instant analyses of people's problems and pointed them towards the promise of a full recovery from whatever was troubling them psychologically or spiritually. It was but one small step from psychological problem-solving to detective work, and in Dr. Morell, radio gained its most notable psychiatrist detective.
I must say, I still don't know how you were so sure it was Mrs. Carr.
I wasn't. Although a number of facts began to emerge which pointed to her, the jealous wife, obviously. Her reaction to the verdict at the inquest. Then I telephoned her, masquerading as someone who had discovered the truth and that she would have to buy my silence. When she agreed to talk it over with me, I was shocked.
Fancy her meeting you at the very place where she shot her husband.
Don't you understand, my dear Miss Frail? She had to return to the scene of her crime. Like any other criminal, she found herself subconsciously impelled to give herself away.
Oh, I see.
She had to confess. Just as with any criminal, an inner compulsion forced Mrs. Powers to bring upon herself her own doom.
Cecil Parker, the third of the actors to take on the plum role of Dr. Morell on radio. Morell was the creation of Ernest Dudley, actor turned prolific radio scriptwriter. He achieved nationwide celebrity in the 1940s as BBC Radio's armchair detective in a weekly series beginning in 1942 in which he reviewed the latest crime fiction. Ernest Dudley remembers his career as the armchair detective.
All I did was to write every week some extracts from the latest thrillers and dramatize them, and we had very good actors playing in them, and we put it out once a week to tell listeners what was the latest thing in crime fiction. They were all extracts, of course, from novels. We did three in about 20 minutes, and it had a long run. We had about 7 million listeners. As you know, the stories, of course, solved the problem. The detective used clues to find the killer, the murderer, or the criminal. And the reader, I always thought, followed the story and at the same time was solving his own problems. This is a bit of psychoanalysis, which I'm very interested in, actually, and was then. And it all seemed to me that that was really the big attraction of detective fiction. And, of course, the detective writers all had their own problems.
Ernest Dudley put his immersion in detective fiction to good use. Dr. Morell was conceived in a Bristol coal cellar in 1940, when Dudley was forced to take refuge there during World War II air raids. He'd been commissioned by the producers of the popular variety show Monday Night at 8 to create a series of playlets featuring a new kind of detective.
The producers of Monday Night at 8 wanted a detective quiz thing, in which a sketch was played with the detective solving the crime, waiting until the end of the program to let the listeners know what the clue was. And so I had to find a detective. And I always had a great admiration for an actor whom I met once, twice in Paris, called Erich von Stroheim. He was a Hollywood producer, and he had a most unpleasant personality, but nonetheless he was attractive to women. Then, you see, Morell was really a doctor, and in particular he was a psychiatrist, you see, and his idea was to solve these crimes by clues that the criminal gave away on account of psychiatric problems. And then I wanted a name, of course, suitable, and first of all I had the name Corelli. But the producers thought, well, no, Mari Corelli's legatees might protest about this. So I had the brilliant idea of calling him Morell, Dr. Morell. He never had a Christian name, but I had a whole list of his qualifications and so forth.
These qualifications appeared in a spoof Who's Who entry in the published version of his first series of Morell stories.
Educated Sorbonne, Rome, Vienna, M.D., Bern, 1923. Lecturer and medico-psychiatrist to police bureaus in New York, Geneva, Rome, Milan and Paris, 1934 to 1937. Published miscellaneous papers on medical and scientific subjects. Writings for journals include Auguste Dupin versus Sherlock Holmes, A Study in Ratiocination, London Archive and Atlantic Weekly, 1931. Address, 221B Harley Street, London W1. Recreations, criminology and fencing, European fencing champion, Epe, Switzerland, 1927, 28 and 29. Clubs, none.
A nice nod to the master, Conan Doyle, there in Morell's London address. Like all great detectives, Morell had a set of distinctive characteristics and idiosyncrasies. Brian Doyle, a lifelong Morell aficionado, recalls them.
He always smoked Egyptian Le Sphinx cigarettes taken from a thin gold cigarette case, and he often spoke through a cloud of cigarette smoke, which must have disturbed his clients, I should think, coughing, no doubt. And he carried a walking stick, which was also a deadly sword stick with a sharp blade at the end. I always remember that was mentioned two or three times. And he was, he said once or twice, he was handy with a .38 Smith & Wesson. But, of course, he didn't really carry a gun. The other thing about Dr. Morell, he wasn't interested at all in the opposite sex. He had no interest in ladies, beautiful or not beautiful. He was more in love with himself than anyone else, I think. In fact, he was at dinner with his secretary, Miss Frail, in one story, I remember, and a beautiful woman named Lola, what else, sent him an urgent message on pink perfume paper, would you believe, asking for his help. She is lovely, I remember, Miss Frail said. Morell replied in typical Morell tones, "My dear Miss Frail, feminine pulchritude makes an impression upon me so infinitesimal it might as well be classified as negligible."
There is no doubt that the criminal is a split personality, his mind unbalanced as a result of subconscious forces which constantly urge him onwards towards self-destruction.
Dr. Morell.
What is it, Miss Shawcroft?
Can you repeat that last point? I'm afraid I'm missing...
You keep on missing what I'm dictating.
I'm sorry, but I'm so tired. Working late last night and having to be here again at the crack of dawn.
I'm perfectly wide awake.
Well, it's all very well for you, Doctor. You're just a human dynamo.
Let us proceed. I must finish these notes today. It's most important.
I hope you aren't expecting me to work till midnight tonight.
If necessary, why not?
Because if you're a machine, Doctor, I'm not. And if you think I can go on like this, slogging away till all hours, you've got another thing coming.
Miss Shawcroft.
I got here at 7 this morning, and you expect me to go on...
In point of fact, Miss Shawcroft, you were 5 minutes late.
Listen to you. You're just not human. That's your trouble. Well, I am. I'm not made of clockwork, and I'm fed up with you treating me as if I was. So good morning to you, Dr. Morell, and goodbye.
Obviously suffering from a persecution complex.
Morell's regular foil and sidekick was his flattery and feather-brained secretary, Miss Frail, a role Ernest Dudley created for Jane Graham, a popular radio actress who also happened to be his wife.
One of the odd things about Dr. Morell was his relationship with Miss Frail. When the series first went out in Monday Night at 8, of course the whole program had millions of listeners, and what created quite a sort of a minor sensation was the way Dr. Morell was so rude, and secretaries all over the country sort of wrote in to say how horrible he was to poor Miss Frail. The reason for it, I suppose, would be that Dr. Morell was so caught up with his solving of crime that he hadn't got much time for anybody else except the criminal, let alone his secretary, Miss Frail.
He bullied her terribly. I don't think he disliked her. He just was highly irritated by her mannerisms. She was forever stumbling across dead bodies, of course, which wasn't very happy for her. And she was always gasping and screaming and becoming breathless and trembling and apologizing, looking uneasy. And sometimes she felt quite sick. And Dr. Morell would snap at her, "Do not be so foolish, Miss Frail. Pull yourself together." And she would find a body and faint. And he'd say, "Miss Frail, pick yourself up, please. One inanimate form is sufficient for the moment, I feel." But some ladies do rather like men who tend to bully them around a bit. I think she might nurture a small corner of her heart from him.
He's attractive in that dark Spanish way. Shouldn't have thought she'd have been his type at all.
Does it necessarily follow that a certain type of man must be attracted to a certain type of woman, or vice versa?
Oh, yes, Doctor. It's all a matter of chemicals. Oh, but then surely you know that.
I've often wondered.
The chemicals that go to make up one individual's character and personality can have tremendous effect upon someone else's chemicals. Sometimes they act like a magnet, drawing each to each. Sometimes the reverse. They repel each other. At other times, the moment the opposite lot of chemicals meet and collide, there's a terrific explosion.
Which is precisely what will happen now, Miss Frail, unless you stop your interminable chatter.
Meet Dr. Morell featured as a segment of Monday Night at 8 in the 1942-43 season and returned in 1946. Brian Doyle recalls the impact the programme made on him.
I was a schoolboy of about 11 during the early war years, I suppose, when I first started to listen to Monday Night at 8 and Dr. Morell, which was a little segment included in Monday Night at 8, which was a magazine programme, very, very popular. And they were 8 to 10 minute little playlets every week, and Dr. Morell's adventures were, as we know, written by Ernest Dudley. And I never used to miss them. Everyone, all my school friends and so on, we used to say, well, did you hear Dr. Morell last night? Did you guess who did it? And that sort of thing. And he was extremely popular.
Dr. Morell?
Miss Frail, just turn off that thing, would you?
Yes. Doctor?
Take that test tube and put it on the rack.
But
Don't drop it.
No, Doctor.
I fancy I'm arriving somewhere in determining the difference between blood groups in relation to the criminal tendencies of the person involved.
Yes, I'm sure you are.
My belief that any emotional upheaval must give rise to certain glandular reactions, which in their turn might have an effect upon the blood, undoubtedly has some basis.
Doctor, the Clifford Gordon
on
the telephone.
And if this effect remains apparent in the blood for a length of time afterward, the conclusion to be drawn... The Clifford fault. Why didn't you tell me instead of standing there gossiping?
Yes, Dr. Morell.
I'll speak to him.
The role of Dr. Morell was created by Dennis Arundel. He'd played Lord Peter Wimsey on the stage in 1936, but this was a very different kind of role. Ernest Dudley.
Dennis, of course, was a very well-known actor and had made a special hit as the murderer in Gaslight. He was a terrific actor, especially in those sinister parts, you know. He got that in his voice. At the same time, he was sexually attractive. He was ideal, and that's why we got him.
Dennis Arundel was a bit of a toff in real life, too. And, of course, Dr. Morell was a toff, too. Arundel had a Cambridge degree and was, I think he was a fellow of St. John's College, Cambridge, as well. And he appeared in many West End plays, and he was a composer and a stage director himself. And he was a very versatile director, but I believe he got rather fed up with playing Dr. Morell. I don't know if he thought it was slightly beneath him, because he'd starred in lots of stage plays, and he must have earned fairly good money at the time. But he made the part himself, and he became famous for playing Dr. Morell, and I didn't think he quite liked it.
Nothing remains in the archive of Dennis Arundel's Dr. Morell, but the voice that so fascinated listeners can be heard in this extract from the Sexton Blake thriller, The Echo Murders, in which he played the villainous blackmailer.
You will sell the mine, and I will take half the proceeds.
What do you mean?
My dear Duncan, you don't imagine I've enjoyed toadying to you. Putting on an act, pretending to be the soapy secretary. It was only useful because people thought I was so harmless. I'm not really, you know. And now that I've found that letter about you killing a man some years ago, now that Mr. Randall has turned up, or rather his body, well, I ask you.
The final run of Meet Dr. Morell in 1947-48 introduced a new actor to the title role.
Dennis didn't want to do it, so we got a chap called Helen Carvick, who really, why we got him was because he had a very similar voice.
In 1957, Ernest Dudley revived Dr. Morell for a series of 13 half-hour episodes on the Light programme called A Case for Dr. Morell. The series was produced by Leslie Bridgemont and starred Cecil Parker as Dr. Morell and Sheila Sim as Miss Frail. It's the only series for which recordings survive.
For the first time, I had the time and the chance in which I was able to develop Dr. Morell's character, his gift for solving murders and criminal cases, and also I was able to build up Miss Frail quite a bit.
Cecil Parker, that lovely character actor, did a very good job. He was a little more warm-hearted than the other two, I think. His voice had more warmth in it than Carvick or Arundel. And, of course, his Miss Frail was Sheila Sim, who is now Lady Attenborough, of course. I'm sure she harks back to those days with some affection.
The BBC broadcast excerpts from the case for Dr. Morell to West Germany to teach the West Germans how colloquial English should be spoken. Great compliment. And that was another instance of the way the BBC did so much towards helping me create this Dr. Morell series.
The milieu for the stories was, like so many detective series of the 1940s and 1950s, very largely middle class.
That was a really nice party.
Yes. I didn't realize it was so late. It's 2 o'clock.
There was no light in Cynthia's room.
No, she'll have gone to bed hours ago.
Oh, I'm tired.
We're getting too old for these late nights. You go up to bed. I'll bring some hot milk.
Thank you, dear. A funny smell of gas.
Yes, it's gas, all right.
Someone must have left a gas tap on in the kitchen.
I'll go and see. Don't worry, dear. By Jove, there is a strong smell. Gosh, it's overpowering. Where's the switch? What the hell? Don't, Cynthia! Cynthia!
The stories frequently centered on murder, literally a matter of life and death in those years when murder was still a capital crime.
The jury are coming back.
Members of the jury, are you agreed upon your verdict?
We are.
Do you find the prisoner, Robert Benson, guilty or not guilty of murder?
Guilty.
You find the prisoner guilty, and that is the verdict of you all?
That is our unanimous verdict.
Prisoner at the bar, you stand convicted of murder. Have you anything to say why sentence of death should not be passed upon you according to law?
I'm innocent. I'm absolutely innocent.
Robert James Benson, the sentence of the court upon you is that you be taken from this place to a lawful prison and thence to a place of execution, and that there you be hanged by the neck until you are dead.
Often, Dr. Morell would be led into a case of detection by the problems of one of his patients.
He started to move towards me. He fell forward on his knees. He was staring at me as if he couldn't believe what had happened. Suddenly, I panicked. All I wanted to do was get away from that. I don't remember getting home. And when the morning came, I meant to give myself up to the police.
But you've changed your mind, Miss Webb?
When I read this morning's papers, it said he'd been found shot and that he'd written a letter to his wife. It was there, in the newspaper.
I happen to have read the account.
And don't you see? I shot him, yes, but he was going to kill himself anyway.
You mean that you merely performed a task he was about to perform for himself?
Well, it does make a difference, doesn't it? I killed him, but he deserved to die. He planned to die. Surely, if I can escape the penalty for what I've done, I'm entitled to.
Well, as for that, I can't advise you. I'm a psychiatrist, not a lawyer, nor am I a judge.
Please help me. What can I do?
Or is it none of these things that you require?
What do you mean?
Have you come to me because you think I will set your conscience at rest? Because you want me to tell you that it's perfectly all right for you to keep silent? You have confessed that you've taken another human being's life. You admit that you've killed a man whom you once loved, and you believe loved you.
Dr. Morell, please.
You willfully murdered him, and now, because of some fortuitous chance which has completely transformed the situation, you ask me to soothe your troubled mind, smooth away your fears, so that you can go on living as if nothing has ever happened. Supposing I said that you must go to the police and tell them what you've told me. What then, Miss Webb?
I don't know. You don't understand. He drove me to it.
It occurs to me that this matter requires probing a little more deeply.
You mean, Dr. Morell, I don't have to go to the police?
I mean, Miss Webb, that this seems to be a case for me after all.
Dr. Morell used a classic combination of observation and deduction in tackling his cases.
Well, the assumption is that your uncle suffered a heart attack while having his bath.
Or that he just fainted.
That would appear to be unlikely.
Why, Doctor? What do you mean?
Had he fainted, he would presumably have fallen back against the bath. Water entering his mouth or nose as a result would bring him out of his fainting attack.
You mean he must have slipped like he did that other time and struck his head?
In this case, there is no evidence of bruising.
Well, then, it must have been his heart.
Well, has he ever been affected by such an attack before?
No, I don't think so.
I can see no external indication that he suffered from any heart condition.
But what are you saying?
Dr. Morell,
I'm saying nothing. Beyond that, there seems to be no evidence so far to suggest the cause of death. The post-mortem may reveal something significant.
Dr. Morell frequently used his authority and his psychological knowledge to trick suspects into confessing.
How long have you been in Mr. Vickers' employment?
Getting on for 12 years.
He appreciated your devotion to the extent of making you a beneficiary under his will. That is what I've been given to understand.
What I mean is that you didn't know where you stood with him. He cut you out of his will as quick as he put you in.
Had you ever known him suffer from giddiness or heart attacks?
I can't say I did, Doctor, but he was getting on a bit. I suppose the bath was too hot and he must have fainted.
You don't really believe that, do you?
How do you mean? What else could it be?
It is hardly conceivable for anyone to drown as a result of a fainting attack while taking a bath. The position in which Miss Vickers found the body lying back against the bath precludes that idea. At the same time, there appears to be no external evidence that Vickers suffered from a heart condition.
Perhaps he fell and knocked himself out.
I could find no bruises suggestive of that.
Then what?
One other alternative offers itself.
What?
Murder.
You don't believe that he...
Oh, want to murder Mr. Vickers?
Murder?
That is a question for the police. Miss Vale.
Yes, Doctor.
If you would put a call through to the local police station.
Yes, Dr. Morell.
Did you, Darrell, observe the marks round the deceased ankles?
His ankles? No, I didn't notice anything.
Marks on his ankles?
As if they'd been grasped by someone lifting up the legs so that he was suddenly submerged.
Who'd do a thing like that?
Someone who, for instance, learned that he was about to alter his will, cutting them out, where otherwise they would have benefited.
Dr. Morell, if poor Mr. Vickers was gripped by the ankle, there'll be fingerprints.
Fingerprints?
That was just what I was about to explain.
Fingerprints on a wet skin? Why are you staring at me?
Those latent fingerprints, chemically more permanent than they might be ordinarily. Permanent enough to withstand water, however hot, up to 500 degrees centigrade.
I suppose I die alone and get the exchange.
Put down that phone.
What?
Put it down. I'll wipe you out too. Oh. I wasn't going to let that old fool cut me out again.
So it was you. Oh, Dr. Morell.
Dr. Morell always remained cool and imperturbable, even when faced with his own murder, as he was when he investigated the mysterious death of the Baroness de Beauville at the Wigmore Hotel.
That a murderer is possessed with an inner compulsion, forcing him to destroy not only his victim, but himself.
How fascinating. Your coffee, Dr. Morell.
Yes, it's getting cold.
Do go on, Doctor.
Thank you, Miss Rail. One manifestation of this inner compulsion is the criminal's obsessive urge to return to the scene of the crime. By so doing, he may thus reveal his guilt and so accomplish his self-destruction. Now, concerning Baroness Beauville's murder, another characteristic emerges. It was revealed to me by the contents of this letter addressed to the Baroness, which I've taken the liberty of opening. It's from a ticket agency, acknowledging a phone call yesterday, cancelling two tickets for tonight's opera. Who cancelled those tickets? Who but the person who knew the Baroness would be unable to attend because she would be dead? Who, in fact, but her extremely efficient secretary?
Oh, no, not that one!
Yes, you, Mademoiselle Rolla. Winter! Stop her drinking that coffee! Mademoiselle Rolla!
Oh, Mademoiselle Rolla!
She's collapsed.
Oh, Mademoiselle, what's happened?
You're too late, I fear, Miss Braille. I saw her earlier in that mirror there. Drop a poison capsule in my coffee. And from the almost instantaneous effect, it must have been prussic acid.
The radio success of Dr. Morell led inevitably to his translation into other media. In 1949, there was a film version, The Case of the Missing Heiress, in which another radio favourite, Valentine Dial, the man in black, played Morell. Ernest Dudley collaborated on a stage play, Dr. Morell, with Arthur Watkin. It was produced in 1950. With Dennis Arundel returning to the role and also directing. In addition, Ernest Dudley wrote 14 books chronicling the exploits of the Doctor. Why was the character so popular? With characteristic modesty, Ernest Dudley attributes the success to Dennis Arundel.
One of the reasons that the character of Dr. Morell made such a hit was, of course, the actor who played him. Dennis Arundel was a very intelligent actor, and he handled Dr. Morell with terrific knowledge and experience. He was an intellectual as an actor and as a person. He brought to Dr. Morell a terrific air of knowledge and of intellect, which, of course, what I try to give Dr. Morell.
Brian Doyle puts it down to Ernest Dudley's creation of an endlessly intriguing character.
He was so different, Morell. As somebody once said, the only problem with Dr. Moreau was Dr. Moreau. And people loved him and hated him at the same time. And his listeners disliked him so enthusiastically that they listened to him in their millions. And as Ernest Dudley has said, I believe, Dr. Morell made his name and he made Dr. Morell's name. It was a tit-for-tat, you know.
Whatever the reason, there is no doubt that Dr. Morell was one of the most memorable of the radio detectives and thrilled millions week after week with a unique combination of arrogance and omniscience.
You have finished your other work, Miss Frayle?
Yes, but...
Good. Then perhaps I may continue dictating these notes to you instead of into this dictating machine.
Yes, Doctor, but...
I would prefer that.
Oh, would you? Well, there's a Miss Nicholson to see you.
Who is she?
Well, she's rather eccentric, I'm afraid. Seems scared that she's going to be murdered. I did my best to get rid of her, but...
To get rid of her, Miss Frayle?
I know you don't want to be bothered with some stupid time-wasting crank.
You think that to see Miss Nicholson would be wasting my time?
Well, she did say something about one of your patients being a friend of hers, but she's obviously got some ridiculous fee in her bonnet.
If that's your opinion, Miss Frayle, then in that event...
It is most definitely. I'll make some excuse, don't worry.
You interrupted me. I was about to say, well, in that event, it would be better if I did see her.
Oh.
Will you inform her that I'll be pleased to see her now?
That was another adventure in a BBC series featuring Ernest Dudley's famous character, Dr. Moreau, and, of course, his secretary, Miss Frayle. The artists taking part were Dr. Morell, Cecil Parker, Miss Frayle, Sheila Sim, Miss Nicholson, Hester Peyton-Brown, Billy Boy the Dog, Percy Edwards, Mr. Nicholson, Alan McClelland, Superintendent Denham, Fred Yule, the station officer, Alan Keith, Julian Smith, and the taxi driver, John Baker. This recorded program was produced by Leslie Bridgemont.
Radio Detectives was written and presented by Professor Geoffrey Richards. The producer was Helen Williams. Next week, in the last in the current series, we go on the beat with PC 49.